Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
From the blackest corners of your mind, they call, pulling you deep into shadow, twisting your senses, keeping you from sleep. It's time to face your darkest fears. This is Tales to Terrify.
Good evening, children of the night, and welcome. This is not Drew Sebastini, but don't worry, he'll be back as soon as we let him out of the basement. Hopefully the monsters don't get too hungry. I'm Kathleen Palm. I work behind the scenes of Tales to Terrify reading Slush, which is pretty awesome. I love finding stories that make me grin or wince or hopefully run away screaming when I'm not reading horror or watching horror or listening to the whispering cornfields that surround my house, I write. My short stories have appeared in the anthologies Blackberry Blood, a quaint and curious volume of gothic tales, and the Big Book of Things That Go Bump in the Night, as well as in Dark Dead Things Issue 2 and on Tales to Terrify. My upper middle grade book, Into the Gray, published by Spooky House Press, just had its first birthday and lurks in the shadows waiting for kids who are brave enough to face the dark. I'm here on Tales to Terrify to celebrate women in horror. So let me wave my bloody claws at one of my favorite women in horror, Allie Malenenko, author of middle grade books Ghost Girl and This Appearing House. For those who don't know, middle grade books are for ages 8 to 12, though upper middle grade covers more 10 to 13-year-olds. Near and dear to my blackened heart, middle grade horror is often overlooked, but can be fun, scary, weird, and truly inspirational. Allie Malenenko's books are fun, are scary, and are exceptionally inspirational. She pours her heart into her words for the fabulous middle schoolers, knowing that they deal with grief, trauma, and mental health issues, knowing that kids feel every emotion, but lack the experience to know how to deal with them. Allie uses horror to help kids explore their feelings and fears by journeying into the shadows of fictional worlds with characters they can relate to. Her debut, Ghost Girl, A Fun Story of Friendship and Standing Up for What's Right in the Face of Evil, is a great book and made me a fan. Her second book, This Appearing House, one of my very favorite books, left images and feelings that will haunt me forever. From the teeth, to the typewriters, to the mourner, from fear to bravery to friendship, my heart will be forever changed. Thanks, Allie. This Appearing House deals with childhood trauma that haunts the main character, Jack. And that past manifests as a very strange and creepy house. It's up to Jack to face her fear and find her way through. It's a fantastic book written by a fantastic person. Not only is Allie Malinenko creative and talented, but she's supportive and kind and passionate. She gives kids words to face the darkness and allows her readers to experience the impact of big emotions while letting them know it's okay to be scared and hurt and angry. She reaches out her hand, admits that the story will be scary, but promises hope in the end. Hope is certainly something we all need. Stories are important. Horror is healthy. And kids need creepy, too. So a huge shout-out to Allie Malinenko, who works to help kids look into dark places, learn they can face whatever monsters lurk there, and know they're not alone, for we all have a house to get through. So celebrate women in horror all year long with middle grade horror, and especially the words of Allie Malinenko. And now, we have one tale for you this evening, which comes to us from Divyashri Krishnan. Divyashri Krishnan studies at Carnegie Mellon University. Her work appears in Diagram, Muzzle Magazine, Frontier Poetry, and elsewhere. Her work has further been recognized by the Best of the Net, Kenyon Review Writers Workshops, Parablus Collective, Pittsburgh Humanities Festival, and Palette Poetry. Children of the Night, join me for Divyashri Krishnan's Small Deaths Everywhere, a Tales to Terrify original.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The monster appeared on a summer night, heady, when the clouds hung low and the air was so thick even the flies were sluggish. He took the shape of a man, young, fine of skin and hair, dirty though they were. His body curled in on itself in a shadowed corner of the stables. His clothes were soaked in blood. It was entirely serendipitous that Bastion found him first. Stable cleaning duty generally belonged to the younger children, one of the few benefits of being a middleborn. But Bastian had ripped a hole in his oldest sister's best frock, and as punishment, he was sent to the stables that fateful night, carrying a moonlight and a pail of water. At first, Bastian did not see him. It was only as he set the pail down and began washing the walls that he noticed the shadows moving, a delicate shifting of the darkness, an arm moving into the moonlight, turning the pale skin bone white. "Please," rasped the monster. "Water." Bastian held himself very still. There was every possibility that he was imagining things, but there was no one else with him, no arm suspended in the moonlight, no voice asking for water. He did this sometimes, conjuring into his mind things that weren't there. "Water," the monster begged again, and the sound was too pitiful to be imaginary, too anguished to have been dreamt up by Bastian's 10-year-old mind. Slowly, silently, he picked up the pail and carried it over to the patch of shadows from which the voice had issued. When he set it down, a pair of deathly pale hands grasped the handles and dragged it forward across the slurry of straw and mud that constituted the stable floor. A face matching the hands in hue then emerged from the dark. Bastian could discern no features clearly before the face bent into water and began to drink. When the monster was finished, he lifted his head and closed his eyes like a man after confession. "Thank you," he said, sounding much stronger. Bastian moved to leave, but the monster's hand shot out again and held his wrist. "One more thing," he said, and then opened his eyes. They were black like Bastian's, but impossibly bright, catching and fractalating the many-hued moonlight. They reminded Bastian of coins in the town's wishing pool, many of which he'd thrown in himself, and perhaps that was why he did not pull himself free. There was too much familiarity in those strange, beautiful eyes. "I need you to get something," the monster said. "My shirt pocket. Please, I need it." Numbly, Bastian reached out to where he supposed the monster's shirt pocket would be, only to recoil immediately after he touched the cloth. It was wet and warm, like the blankets his youngest brother always soiled, but Bastian's fingers had come back red. The monster smiled briefly. The movement broke the delicate skin of his dry lips, and pearls of blood appeared between the cracks. "Do not fear me," he said. "You will not be hurt. But please, reach in." Squeezing his eyes shut, Bastian moved his hand across the soaked fabric, feeling the bony contours of the monster's chest, and slipped his fingers into the pocket. They brushed something slimy, almost alive. Gritting his teeth, he pulled it out and dropped it straight onto the monster's lap. It was a round, wet red thing, crisscrossed with lines of blue and white, glistening faintly in the light. The monster handled it like something impossibly precious. "Finally," he murmured, eyes fluttering closed again in that strange ecstasy. As Bastian watched, he raised the thing to his lips and sank his teeth in.
"What?"
Bastian's voice was barely a whisper.
"What is that?"
The monster did not answer until he had chewed through the last bit of red, wet thing. When he had finished, he opened those awfully bright eyes again and regarded Bastian. "A heart," he said.
"A heart? Of what?"
The monster smiled, and his teeth were coated in red. "Of a man." For a second, Bastian did not know whether to believe him, this strange, pale creature with such arresting eyes and hair like black silk, parted clumsily down the middle. But the intensity in his gaze dissipated Bastian's doubts like fine smoke.
Are you a monster?"
Bastian asked. The monster laughed, a soft, gasping sort of sound. I am."
"But you look like a man."
"I am also a man."
"But how can you be both?"
The monster leaned back until his face was half obscured by shadow. "Very rarely is any creature just one thing."
"I am not a monster," Bastian said stubbornly.
"No," said the monster for a moment, his voice gentled. "But that does not mean you will never be."
Bastian shook his head fiercely. "I don't understand you."
"I do not expect you to," said the monster wryly. "It is difficult even for creatures like me to understand. Everyone believes that they must be more one than the other, more man than monster, more monster than man."
"And you?"
The monster quirked one black brow in question.
Bastian said, "Which are you most, man or monster?"
The monster's eyes unfocused briefly, and he smiled, a different sort of smile than before, half bitter, half wistful.
"Monster, I think," he said at last. "Once I was, but no. Now I am more monster than man."
This said so matter-of-factly might have scared another, someone not quite so young as Bastion, so full of heart, so bright of trust. But he had struck something with this monster disguised as a beautiful man. Something beginning with a pail of water, and ending with a heart and a child's questions. A monster was a monster, no doubt, but this one, Bastion thought, would be his. He stayed for 10 days. For the first few, he remained in the stables, gathering his strength. After that, Bastion moved him into a small shed in one of the fields behind his house, a good 20 minutes' walk away. He was a well-behaved monster in most respects, clean, quiet, obedient. He answered all of Bastion's questions, of which there were multitudes. This in itself was a miracle. Bastion had never met an adult that hadn't told him to shut up at least once. But the monster never did. He simply smiled and spoke his answers in the same soft, sweet tone he'd used on Bastion that first night. The one glaring issue was his diet. It was unusual, if one were being kind. Horrific, if one were being frank. Hearts only, the monster had told Bastion firmly. Human is best, of course, but... Oh, don't look at me like that. I'm not asking you to kill anyone. I can subsist on animal hearts well enough, if that's all there is. Goats, horses, rabbits, etc. No rats or small vermin, please. I do have standards. So every morning, before the first rays of the morning sun reddened the sky, Bastion would roam the fields that border the town, picking out animals that might constitute a good meal without raising too much alarm from the herdsmen. He chose runty sheep, lame horses, dogs with broken limbs. Rabbit was best to avoid suspicion, as they were wild in these parts, but they were extremely difficult to catch. He couldn't take too many farm animals. Who knew how many corpses could be passed off as accidents before the farmers grew suspicious? On the 10th day, Bastion found out. "We have a wolf problem," his father announced at breakfast. Bastion glanced up to see his mother's hands flutter to cover her mouth. "I thought the fences we put up kept the wolves out for good," she asked anxiously. It's been years since we had any. What happened?" Bastion's father shrugged his massive shoulders. "There's yet to be any sightings of the bastards, but it's them for sure. 2 sheep have been found dead in the last week, and another 5 missing. With winter and the slaughtering coming soon, we need to put a stop to it." "What are you going to do?" Bastion asked, his mouth already souring with fear. "Hunt them down," the father said grimly, "like we did before the fencing. Knives and swords and scythes in hand. We'll comb every inch of the fields and we'll rout them out for good." Bastion smiled and nodded. A few minutes later, he excused himself from the table. The sun burned unceasingly through the thin cloud cover, even though the air was beginning to nip. Tufts of small purple flowers folded easily under the crush of Bastion's feet as he ran towards the shed. Mud from last night's rain clung to his shoes and the hem of his pants, which he would have to wash later to avoid questions. The smell reached him before the shed even came into view. There was no helping it. Covering his nose with the collar of his shirt, Bastion quickened his pace and ducked through the small wooden doorframe. The monster was sitting cross-legged on the floor, picking blood from under his fingernails. The past 10 days' rest in Bastion's ministrations had done him much good. Color had come back into his skin, luster to his skin and hair, flesh to his arms and legs. He grew more beautiful by the day, the softness of his full mouth more evident now that his lips were no longer chapped. His eyelashes were long and swept his cheekbones when he blinked. The planes of his face seemed chiseled, almost unfairly perfect, a far cry from the skin over bones thing he'd been that first night. Opposite him was the source of the horrid smell, what Bastion had come to term the graveyard. It was where he deposited most of the bodies of the animals he killed. At first he'd just left them out in the fields, but that made it too easy for people to find them. The monster had said he didn't mind the smell or the blood. In fact, he enjoyed gnawing on an arm every now and then, so the bodies collected in the shed piled one on top of the other and coated with an undulating swarm of flies. "You're here early," the monster commented without looking up from his nails. "Where is it lunchtime already?" "They're coming for you," Bastion gasped out. The monster looked up, and there was no more levity in his expression, no lazy contentment in his posture. Every line of his fine, dark body was tense as a drawn bowstring. "Explain," he said, and the command settled over Bastion like a shroud. "They think it's wolves," Bastion said, taking a seat on the floor as far away from the animal corpses as possible. "At any rate, they found the bodies, and they know something's killing them. My father says they'll start searching the fields. If they find you here, and with that," he gestured to the graveyard, "they'll kill you on sight." The monster grinned, flashing pearly white teeth. "Or maybe I'll kill them." A tidal wave of terror rose suddenly in Bastion at the thought. He could almost see his father now, slaughtered like one of the sheep in the graveyard, face slack, chest torn open. "You can't!" He was standing now, trembling. The monster looked up at him calmly. "It's me or them, Bastion."
"It isn't."
"It won't be. We'll clean the place, hide you somewhere else. There's woods further back, which they're bound to search as well. Then I'll sneak you into the house. That's the last place they'll check." The monster snorted. "With six siblings, your house is hardly a fortress of privacy." "We have to do something," Bastion clenched his fist. "I won't let you kill my father like an animal." "I didn't kill these animals," the monster reminded him in a soft voice. "You did. I just ate their hearts." Bastion's entire body shuddered. He stared at the monster. His monster, the most beautiful man he'd ever seen. They had struck a covenant, the two of them, when Bastion began taking care of him. He considered it an honor, a special treat. But now... "Easy," the monster said gently. "I won't kill your father, Bastion. I am mostly monster, it's true. But a part of me is also man. I know of human kindness and mercy, though, truth be told, you are the first to show them to me in a long time." He smiled. "No one will come to harm from my hand this time. But there is no place for us both, the townspeople and I." "Then," Bastion breathed, "what are you saying? You're
leaving?"
"Yes." The monster sighed and got to his feet. "I have postponed the inevitable far too long. And would that I could stay. Your company is much more pleasant than that, what awaits me."
"What is it that awaits you?"
"Consequences for my actions, I expect." This delivered with a wry smile that had become familiar to Bastion over the days. The warmth of that smile jarred against the apprehension that still lingered from his previous scare. If there were ever proof of the duality of creatures, this was it. To speak so cavalierly of murder, and then so sweetly of farewell. "Your actions," Bastion repeated dully. Something ached in his chest. "Your, the man's heart." The monster nodded. "He was no sheep to be easily slaughtered and hidden in a shed. When I return, I will face the wrath of those who loved him, or who claimed to, at least." A strange anxiety began to bloom in Bastion. There was no way for the monster to stay, especially not after what he'd threatened. But Bastion still couldn't stomach the thought of him getting hurt. Perhaps the covenant that entailed this sort of bond as well, less physical than their exchange of conversation for animal hearts, an emotional trade that had taken place without Bastion realizing it, where the monster laid his roots in his chest and, when leaving, tried to pull them out. He didn't want them out, Bastion realized. He didn't want to lose his monster, the first secret he'd ever had to himself. And yet he could not stay. "Hide somewhere else, then," Bastion heard himself say. "Find another town, another farm with sheep and goats and horses for you to eat, another child to take care of you." "You are not so easily replaced," the monster murmured. "I've seen more of the world than you, trust me. Few children would have done what you did. I was weak. If you'd called your father then, he could have had my head. But you gave me water instead."
"You needed it."
"Many a man would deny another water who needed it," the monster lifted his bright, bright eyes to Bastion. "You were right. You are no monster. You are something else entirely. And we'll meet again, Bastion, in this life. I'll make sure of it." Bastion sank to the ground and wrapped his arms around his knees. "How?" he asked, swallowing down the burn of tears in his throat. Something rustled as the monster reached into his pocket, then a clink as it fell to the ground. It was a silver coin strung on a leather thong, a makeshift necklace and one Bastion had never seen before. "Is this yours?" he asked, reaching out to touch the coin. "You never showed me." The monster brushed a hand over Bastion's head, the pads of his fine fingers barely kissing the black curls. "It's yours now. If you ever meet someone like me again, more monster than man, this coin will keep you from harm. And if that someone is me, I will know you."
"But will I know you?" Bastion looked up then, grasping the necklace in one hand. I call you my monster, but I don't even know your name."
"Names?" the monster scoffed. "Monster works well enough for my purposes." But Bastion's mouth remained in its stubborn line, and at last he relented. "Monster is my office now, to be sure. But my name, before, when I was more man than monster, my name was Silas." He left that night. For years afterwards, Bastion would catch himself looking towards the shed, searching for signs of movement that never came. The animal bodies were never discovered, as Bastion chopped them into pieces and scattered them across the woods. Nor were any wolves found. The greatest secret Bastion had ever kept remained just that, a secret. Time passed. Winters came and went and came again. Bastion shot up in height and never really stopped, not until he towered over his father. His face changed dramatically, gaining shadow and depth and shedding his childhood fat. He never quite gained the breadth of muscle that a farmer was expected to have, and thus remained aloof, but strong until his 22nd year. Young women and men alike asked for his hand during the dances of the slaughtering. Sometimes he accepted, but most times he declined. "Saving yourself for someone?" they teased, and he would laugh. Laugh, and remember pale skin, dark hair like fine ash, eyes brighter than silver coins, brighter even than the one that rested in the hollow of his throat. Always, though, the metal grew tarnished and the leather worn down. The night Bastion gave his pail of water to a shadowy stranger, something dark took root in his being and never let go. Now it festered, hungered, seeking everywhere for an outlet. He found himself restless and unable to find contentment in the work he was supposed to enjoy. Tilling the field, harvesting the crop, dancing with pretty girls and boys, cared for none of it. The only thing he found intriguing was the slaughtering itself. Every year the men would gather up the animals and take them to a clearing in the woods. There, with sharpened blades at the ready, they would butcher the sheep and goats and heifers for their meat. It was nasty work, and some men couldn't handle it. They would slink off into the woods to throw up their dinners or even run back home. But Bastion never balked. There was a rhythm to the slaughtering, a sort of natural harmony in the sound of the blade against the whetstone and then slicing through flesh, grinding against bone, thumping against packed earth. It felt familiar. Sometimes, as Bastion sold his butchered meat in the market, a doe-eyed boy would ask him for a kiss. "Just a small one, please." And Bastion would feel guilty. He was supposed to want this, the flirting, the playing, the joy and laughter. This was what men loved, and what monsters hated. But he wanted something different. Try as he might to shake it, he wasn't a monster. Silas had said so himself. So why was he so enamored with monstrous things? And every night, the coin weighed heavier and heavier against his throat, so cold it almost burned his skin. Sometimes he lifted it up just to see if it had left a scar, a brand, only to be disappointed by smooth skin. The night before his 23rd birthday, Bastion decided enough was enough. He was done with the pining, the loneliness hollowing away at his center. He would seek Silas out, no matter how far the journey took him. No matter if he had to travel for years on end, he would find his monster again. "You'll never guess who's arriving in town today," Bastion's sister, Amarantha, said over lunch. She was nearly bouncing out of her seat, which might have been endearing except that she was 27 years old and the eldest of six siblings. "God of lightning-struck trees," one brother said sarcastically, naming a deity from an oft-repeated fairy tale. Amarantha ignored him, which she was very good at doing. In a dramatic whisper, she said, "Royalty." Bastion looked up from his lunch and raised an eyebrow. "The king's coming here?" "He is," Amarantha clapped her hands together. "It's part of the rounds he's been making every few years to get a sense of the country's needs. Isn't that wonderful?" It was wonderful indeed. The king was relatively new, having come into power barely a decade ago, after the untimely death of his predecessor. Bastion knew very little about him, only that he was well-liked across the country and often stayed in small towns to connect with the people. "I'm surprised he's coming here," Bastion murmured. "We're not even on the map."
"That's why he's coming here, to put us on the map."
Bastion shrugged and went back to his meal. He didn't keep track of things like this, which often had no impact on him. The king would come, deliver a few speeches, hold a few feasts with the richer members of town, then take his leave once he tired of slumming it with them. His siblings could fret about what to wear to the welcome ceremony and how to get invited to the best feasts. He had more important things on his mind. His plan for finding Silas was starting to come together. He'd begun gathering maps from whichever townspeople were kind enough to lend them to him. noting down the locations he thought Silas might be most likely to settle down. He wished he'd asked Silas who the man was that he'd killed. He might have narrowed it down. It was the plan that kept him too preoccupied the night of the king's arrival to remember the welcoming ceremony, which everyone was supposed to attend. By the time he did remember, the sky was black as pitch and the sounds of merriment distant. Swearing under his breath, Bastian dressed quickly in his best clothes and sprinted out the door. The celebration had moved into the center of town, and he had to travel for quite a while before he heard voices. Two figures stood together, dressed in uniform and armed to the teeth. King's Guard. Bastian slowed to a walk, intending to apologize for showing up late when he caught the dregs of their conversation.
"This place is the perfect breeding ground," one said. "I mean, flawless conditions. Small town, secluded, so you can't get word of warning in or out too fast. Good food supply, healthy stuff, so the hearts are strong."
"I wish we could eat them now," the other complained. "We never get the humans, only the stupid livestock."
"The human hearts are for the king and his knights, you nit."
The other guard scuffed his shoe against the group.
"Still, shouldn't we get one for our trouble?"
Bastian didn't stay to hear the rest. Holding his breath, he made his steps as quiet and soft as possible until he was sure he was out of earshot, then began to run at full tilt. By the time he reached his house, his chest had begun to ache with lack of oxygen. His thighs and calves burned. He leaned against the house to catch his breath and turn the words he'd just heard over in his mind.
Monsters! Here they were, others, just as Silas had told him. The king and his fine men weren't here to see how the town was doing. They were here to eat the hearts of the townspeople.
A chill ran through Bastian's body. Had the new king killed and eaten the heart of his predecessor, too? How many of these monsters were out there, hiding in plain sight? And Bastian was the only one who knew they existed. The rest of the town fawned over the king, enamored by his opulence and desperate for the briefest second of attention he might grace them with. They had no idea of the truth, which meant it was Bastian's job to protect them. One hand lifted to his throat, where the silver coin still hung. This was his protection. Silas had said. Everybody else was vulnerable. His mother, father, all his siblings and nieces and nephews, the neighbors, the fruit vendors, the apothecaries, the butchers, the farmers, everyone. They would respond to the king's summons with childish joy, like sheep going happily to their slaughter. How could he save them all? No one had noticed Bastian's absence at the welcoming ceremony, which was a small miracle. It was hard to concentrate on anything his family said when they returned, but their general mood seemed giddy, something about an announcement the king would make tomorrow. "He's going to invite someone to dine with him," Amarantha, her eyes shining. "And it's a random selection, which means it could be any of us." It took Bastian a few seconds to catch up on what they were saying. His head jerked up. "The king is going to dine on someone?" Amarantha clicked her tongue. "He's going to dine with somebody. Honestly, Bastian, are you going deaf?" He directed towards her the expected annoyance, but inside him a sickening cold was growing. Amarantha had no idea how close dining on and dining with were when it came to the king. "I hope I get chosen," Amarantha sighed. Bastion's knuckles whitened.
"You're sure it's just one person?"
"Fairly sure." Slowly a plan began to take shape in Bastion's head. The announcement the next day was attended by everyone in the town, along with several people decidedly not from town. "I don't know why they come," one of Bastion's brothers muttered. "It's not like they'll get chosen." Bastian was too stressed to pay attention to anything. He had removed his necklace and now clutched it in one hand, holding it so tightly the coin dug into his palm. As soon as whoever was invited was announced, he had to get them the necklace. If Silas was telling the truth, it would save them from an otherwise horrific death. A pair of horns blew. The king was here. A palanquin was carried towards a small platform everyone was congregating in front of. It wasn't ostentatious in its coloring like the last king's style had been, but it was clearly high quality. Higher quality than anything Bastian owned. What a life, Bastian thought. Wearing silks, ruling countries, getting carried in palanquins. Oh, and feasting on human hearts. It all sounded incredibly luxurious, even the latter part. Something about eating hearts felt like the pinnacle of decadence. And what was royalty, if not decadent? The palanquin stopped and the fabric was parted. All around Bastion, adoring eyes stared up at where the king would soon exit. They had already seen him. They were only eager to see him again. Bastion was likely the only one who hadn't and wasn't. One foot, clad in smooth black leather, descended, then another. Then Silas stepped out of the palanquin. Bastion had to clamp a hand over his mouth to keep himself silent. Nausea bubbled up inside him, the horror at realizing Silas was the king, mingling with the savage, unspeakable joy at seeing him again. Bastion hadn't eaten much as it was, too preoccupied with the plan, but what he had eaten was threatening to come back up. My gods, the plan! Bastion stared down at the coin necklace in his hand. Silas would recognize it. Or would he? It's been 13 years, which was a long time by any measure, even though Silas didn't look like he'd aged a day. It was agonizing. Silas looked exactly the same, his fine, silken hair parted down the middle again, silver rings adorning those gorgeous bony fingers, his moonlit eyes shining down at the crowd. He spread his hands in greeting, and the crowd cheered and screamed. Though Silas looked the same, he wasn't. He moved with arrogance, poise, charm, looking every bit the born monarch. There was nothing of the soft, earnest monster Bastion had met in the stables. What was Bastion supposed to do? My people, Silas called, his voice like rippling silk. I told you last night I would welcome one of you to join me to dine each night of my stay, to bring to my council's ear every problem you wish to address. I have now made the decision for who will be the first. The crowd erupted, roaring and stomping and seizing at one another in excitement. Silas smiled, his eyes roaming the crowd, Bastion stiffening, expecting something. A flash of recognition, a double take, something. But his eyes, those beautiful, beautiful eyes, passed right over Bastion, and somehow that hurt worse than anything else. Tonight, Silas said, still smiling that strange, too warm smile, I welcome you to my table. Tonight, you'll feast like a king. He drew a slip of paper from his shirt pocket. Amarantha! Blood roared in Bastion's ears so loud it nearly drowned out Amarantha's delighted cries. Hands stretched from everywhere, grasping her shoulder or arms in envious congratulations. Bastion could see awe in the eyes that surrounded them. Anger, longing, and above it all, Silas on the platform, smiling at Amarantha like a man welcoming his lover home. He couldn't act suspicious. He couldn't draw attention to himself. The Silas that had brushed his hair so lovingly and giving him his coin and his name was not this Silas. There was no telling what he might do if he noticed Bastion, the only human in the crowd that knew his secret. The logical thing would be to kill him. The thought made Bastion's throat seize. He couldn't imagine such cruelty from Silas, though he knew him capable of it. I won't let him kill me, Bastion thought fiercely. I won't even let him make that choice. He tightened his fist around the coin. There was no guarantee it would protect Amarantha. Even if Silas recognized it and honored his promise, Amarantha looked nothing like young Bastion. But there was the possibility it would save her, and Bastion had to believe in that. Otherwise, can you believe it? Amarantha whispered to him, her eyes glistening. I've never been so excited in my life. Bastion tried for a smile. Not even when you were asked to dance 7 times at the slaughtering? Oh, of course not, you nit. Her cheeks were pinker and more full of life than he'd ever seen them. I mean, that was wonderful. But you saw the king. He's gorgeous and kind and charming, and I'm to dine with him. An experience of a lifetime, Bastion agreed. His stomach felt like it had shrunk to the size of a peach pit. 13 years ago, a monster in the shape of a man stumbled into a stable, soaked in blood, and carrying a man's heart in his shirt pocket. Now he stood on a platform dressed in fine black silks, his head adorned with the golden circlet of the king. And Bastion was the only one who knew. No matter how he might have missed Silas, hungered for the darkness he had brought into Bastion's life, Bastion could not stand by and let his sister die. I am no monster, he told himself, no matter how I long to be. A gift for you, Amma, he said with a smile, for when you go to dinner. He held out the necklace. Please wear it, won't you? That night, half the town gathered outside the house to see Amarantha off. She dressed herself in her finest skirt, a velvet brocade piece that had been handed down from their grandmother. With a shawl of black lace across her shoulders, gems shone from her ears, at odds with the plain silver coin hanging around her neck. When someone tried to remove it, Amarantha shook her head. "It's a gift from my brother," she said, smiling warmly. "He's worn it for years, and he gave it to me. I won't take it off." Bastion, standing in the shadows, felt tears burn his eyes. "When will Alma return?" one of his brothers asked. "Can we stay awake until she comes back?" Bastion shook his head. "She'll likely be very late. You can see her in the morning." "Hopefully." As the town quieted and the lamps blinked out, Bastion stayed wide awake. He stared out through the open window in the direction of the great house, where the king, Silas, was staying for the time being. He couldn't see it, but he could imagine the windows bright with buttery lantern light, the sounds of laughter and the clinking of goblets hanging in the chill evening air. Amarantha, the daughter of a simple farmer, would be overwhelmed by the wealth, the merriment, the ease with which the rich led their lives. "Will they kill her before dinner? Or will they fatten her up with roast mutton, red sauce, beds of spiced rice, herb potatoes, rich cheeses, and exotic desserts?" Bastion's hands had been perpetually clenched for the past few hours. He forced himself to open them and saw his nails had created half-moon cuts along his palm, blood purling from the skin. He released a shuddering breath and wiped the blood and sweat off on his pants. If she didn't return by sunrise, he would go to the house. What he planned to do once he got there, well, he'd figure it out. An hour or so before dawn, Bastion saw her, her eyes stung with exhaustion. But the sight of Amarantha's dark skirt, silhouetted running through the graying shadows, galvanized him like a static shock. He sprang up and took the stairs down two at a time, taking care not to trot on the creakiest steps. By the time he made it to the door, she was ascending the short gravel path towards him. The necklace was gone from her neck. "What happened?" Bastion asked, reaching out to steady his sister as she neared him. Amarantha shook her head. "It was the strangest night of my life. I don't even know how to explain it." "Please," Bastion gripped her shoulders. "Try." He took a shuddering breath and sank down on the threshold. "Everything was great at first. It was all I imagined. Beautiful women wearing fine skirts and jewels, dancing with the handsomest men I have ever seen, all having the gayest time. I felt like a cow next to them, but everyone treated me kindly. They gave me sweets and glasses of fine liqueur. I was asked to dance 5 times. And I would have been asked a 6th had I not developed awful leg cramps." Bastion smiled faintly. "Ooh, that sounds wonderful. So what went wrong?" "The king," Amarantha said, frowning. "He was perfectly cordial to me for about 5 seconds. Then he changed. It was the strangest thing. We were at the feast, and everyone was eating, and it all looked and smelled so delicious. But he wouldn't let me eat. He kept asking me questions in this terrible voice, like he would hurt me if I didn't answer them properly."
"What questions?"
Amarantha's hand went to her bare neck. "He wanted to know about the necklace, where it was from. Had I been given it or had it been passed down? Why was I wearing it? Things like that."
"What did you say?"
"Not much," Amarantha said, shrugging. I mean, there wasn't much to tell anyhow. I said it was my brother's and that he had given it to me as a gift just for the night. Then he wanted to know about you."
Bastion's mouth had gone dry.
"What did he want to know?"
"Your name, where you lived, what you looked like, how old you were?"
She frowned again. It was very invasive, and his insistence was starting to frighten me, so I didn't answer him. Honestly, I thought he might snap my neck for that.
"You shouldn't have risked your life like that," Bastion chided softly.
"No matter the danger to me, you should have given him what he wanted." Amarantha smiled, and in that moment, she was every bit the older sister, unruffled, implacable, endlessly protective. "I wouldn't have risked you with a crossbow to my head. Then how did you escape?"
"He let me go," Amarantha said, then shrugged again when she saw Bastion's confusion.
"When he'd realized I'd clammed up, he suddenly became very pleasant, even inviting me to finish my dinner. I didn't have much of an appetite, though, and soon begged his leave, and he let me go."
That was very odd, true. It had been 13 years since Bastion had last known Silas, but to give up on his goal so quickly seemed remarkably uncharacteristic. The silence he remembered would have pushed and prodded, getting what he wanted at all costs. This was the man that had threatened Bastion's father, after all. Bastion doubted he'd gotten much more lenient since then. Yet Silas had let her go. Perhaps the food was laced with something. But no, Amarantha seemed fine.
and Bastion, gazing out onto the street, could see no one that might have followed her. "That's lucky," he said, ignoring the knot of unease in his stomach. "Well, let's get you inside. The young ones will be up early, and you need to get some sleep before they ambush you." Working as quietly as possible, Bastion helped Almirantha up the stairs and into her room, where she shed the heavy velvet dress in favor of her usual light linen nightgown. As he removed the jewelry from her wrists and ears, he kept an eye out for any bruises or marks of violence, but Almirantha seemed completely untouched. Maybe Silas really had let her go, no strings attached. Somehow Bastion couldn't quite believe it. "Thank you," Almirantha said as she slid beneath her bed covers, "for the necklace and staying up all night, and for taking care of me. You do act so old sometimes." "Someone has to," Bastion joked, and they shared a smile. As he closed the door behind him, Bastion's smile slipped. What Almirantha had said was a sentiment commonly expressed by people who knew him. They looked into his eyes, fathomless black that reflected the smallest shred of light, and remarked that he seemed to have wisdom beyond his age, that he'd witnessed things no other children had ever seen. He thought of the graveyard, the stinking pile of animal corpses, of the blood that dried under his fingernails and would never wash away no matter how he scrubbed. He thought of the soft squelching of teeth through flesh that became familiar in his time with Silas, the warmth and heft of a fresh heart in his hand, all the times he had stared at the throbbing red thing and wondered what it would be like to taste it. In many ways, Silas was the point around which Bastion's life pivoted. Up until that night in the stables, he'd had a fairly normal childhood. He might have grown up like all the other children, utterly satisfied with the life of farming and drudging and dancing around bonfires, had he just walked away that night. But normal was something so far estranged from Bastion now that he couldn't even imagine it. Silas hadn't planted the darkness in Bastion. With or without him, Bastion would have found a way to feed it. Slowly, Bastion made his way down the hall to his room. Moonlight mingled with the graying shadows, hearkening dawn's fast approach. Something heavy lightened his limbs, so that every step towards his door was slower, slower, the distance seeming longer and longer until all at once he was there. Turning the knob, pushing it open, seeing the figure that stood half-shadowed in the center of the room, every feature achingly familiar, as though no time had passed at all. "Hello, Bastion," Silas said. He raised his left hand where the necklace dangled from his fist. "Did you miss me?" Bastion exhaled sharply and closed the door behind him. He felt woozy, no longer confident in his body's ability to hold him up. His legs kept him standing, his mouth to tame his tongue. But Silas made no movement towards him, and Bastion would not go to him. Not yet. So he drew in a deep breath, then another, until his vision cleared and sharpened into focus. Silas was dressed in a sort of finery a king might wear to a feast. A white shirt of fine silk, tucked into ink-black pants, his shoes with silver buckles, so polished they shined. He was missing a coat. The cold did not affect him, nor did it prick color into his cheeks. Silas stood as pale and still as Bastion remembered him, more marble statue than man. Not man, Bastion thought. Monster. "You followed Alma." It wasn't a question.
"I did."
"You took her necklace." Silas tilted his head.
"It wasn't hers.
It's not yours either."
"It's more mine than hers," he smiled.
"It was mine before it was yours." Bastion pressed his lips together to keep from responding. This line of conversation was inane. Not at all what he'd imagined their first meeting after 13 years to be.
"Why are you here?" he asked instead.
Silas lifted a shoulder in a delicate shrug.
"Can't I visit an old friend?"
"You're not my friend. You're a monster."
"I am," Silas seemed amused. "But if my being a monster so disturbs you, then tell me,
what's this?" He produced a piece of paper from his shirt pocket, folded neatly into squares as he unfolded it. Bastion recognized the ink, the swoop of the script, the diagram sketched neatly around the text. His cheeks flushed.
"Where did you get that?"
"Places Silas might be," Silas read aloud. "Eats animal hearts, so looking in familiar countries. Clever, but your logic is flawed."
"I tolerate animal hearts, but I much prefer human hearts. Places of high human density are where you'll find me, which farmlands are not."
You went through my stuff?
I did, Silas acknowledged unapologetic. Your room's quite spare for a boy. I expected more books. Aren't boys your age supposed to be studying? Don't tell me you've decided to be a farmer.
Bastian gaped at him for a moment, speechless. When he regained his voice, it was tight with anger. First, not a boy. Second, I haven't decided anything. All the boys here become farmers. Precious few go off to university, and besides, I'm not interested in studying.
But you're interested in farming.
Bastian opened his mouth to deny it. Then he thought of the slaughtering, the clearing flooded with sun and ringed by trees with autumn foliage, the lines of dull-faced cows and sheep chewing absentmindedly, the scythe blades silvering in the light. He said nothing, and Silas smiled.
Oh, Bastian, he said, and his tone was more fond than Bastian could bear.
I have missed you.
Bastian trembled, half in fury, half in anguish. Then why did you never come back?
I was busy.
Busy with what?
Silas spread his hand.
Ruling the country, of course.
That's what I don't understand. Bastian took a few short, sharp steps forward, then stopped.
How did you become king? What happened to the last one?
I killed him, Silas said simply. And then I ran away and ate his heart in a dirty set of stables while a little boy watched me with the biggest eyes I've ever seen.
And when you left, you left to become king?
I did.
Bastian struggled to find words. How did you not get caught?
I captured a religious zealot trying to flee the kingdom and had him executed for assassinating the king, Silas grinned. The evidence was damning and made all the more so because the former king, God bless his soul, indicated his suspicions about the man in a letter a few days earlier. In that same letter, he named me his successor.
And what of the people who knew him, his family?
It appears the zealot managed to kill them too.
Numbly, Bastian said, you're a monster.
I am. But you knew that.
And Bastian did. He'd known since the moment Silas took the heart from his shirt pocket and ate it right there, without a care for the child crouched in front of him. But Bastian hadn't walked away then, and gods though he knew he should, he couldn't walk away now. His voice was quiet, hoarse when he spoke.
What have you done to me, Silas?
The amusement had left Silas's face, replaced by a solemn intensity. Nothing that was not already happening to you.
What do you want from me?
You know.
Bastian shook his head, his body beginning to shudder again.
No, I don't.
You do.
Tell me. He raised his head, tears making silver tracks down his face, and gazed into Silas's moonlit eyes.
Please.
I want you to come with me, Silas said, his voice soft as a lover's caress. Anywhere you want to go, I'll take you. We'll explore the wonders of the world and drink our fill of every dark delicacy this world has made for us. We'll glut ourselves on luxury and pleasure and sin, and it will be wonderful because we'll do it together. You have no idea what I've seen in my life. Majesties like you cannot imagine. You needn't settle for this life. You needn't settle for any life at all. You can have anything you want, whatever you want, if you just say the word.
Why me?
Bastian whispered, and Silas took a step toward him. Because you were the little boy that found a monster and didn't run away. You gave him water, fed him kindness, lied and killed for him. You made him yours. Now you must make good on that promise.
My family will be taken care of.
They will want for nothing. Nothing you could give them by staying.
Bastian closed his eyes briefly, feeling the burn of tears in his eyes, and thought of Amarantha. She would miss him terribly, mourn him even, but the riches Silas could give her would soothe that ache. Soon it would be gone. For Bastian realized now that there had never been another future for him, not truly. All his life he had been waiting for this. Now it was here. Everything he had ever wanted, held in lush lips and silken hair and silvery eyes that burned with promise.
Yes, he said softly, but the words seemed to echo around the room. I'll come with you, but promise me you won't hurt anyone from this town, you or your people.
Promise me.
Silas smiled again, so genuinely pleased an expression that Bastion's heart stuttered in his beat.
I promise, he said.
Then his eyes took on a knowing glint. But my people and I must feed somehow, you know this. If not your town, then it will be another.
Bastion bowed his head. He knew. And if he were a better person, he would have demanded that Silas subsist only on animal hearts if he wanted Bastion to come with him.
If he were a better person, he might have even refused the offer outright, demanding to stay with his family, his people. Men, not monsters.
But Bastion wasn't a better person. He was neither man nor monster, something different, something in between. And Silas knew it just as well as he did.
I accept. Silas moved towards him then, coming fully out of the shadows, and Bastion saw he was holding something in his right hand. The bundle of black cloth fit perfectly in Silas's palm, staining it red. Bastion took it, felt the familiar weight, the warm wetness that no longer disgusted him. Gazing into Silas's eyes, he unwrapped the bundle and let the fabric fall away.
Animal?
He asked, already knowing the answer.
Man.
Bastion ran a finger down the line of white that bisected the heart, brought it to his mouth and sucked, tasting the familiar copper of blood, but now something else as well, a sweetness, a richness made his mouth tingle. The world seemed to hold its breath. Outside, dawn was beginning to break. Flicks of gold streaking outwards like small comets. Silas was watching Bastion the way Bastion had always watched him. Bastion lifted the heart to his mouth.
There is no going back from this, he thought. Then he bit.
That was Divyashree Krishnan's Small Deaths Everywhere, as read by Stephen Geggan. Steve Geggan is a voice actor and narrator from Boston, Massachusetts. Stephen has written two books in the military thriller genre, which are available on Kindle. He has participated in several other podcasts and can be found on his website, www.stephengeggan.com. Thank you, Stephen.
Well, children of the night, the hour is late, and we've run out of tales to tell. For now. Tales to Terrify is made possible by the tremendous generosity of our supporters on Patreon and PayPal. Incredible fans like Lessel Baxter, Paul Belcher, Amanda Carrillo, Amanda Gottfried, and Orion D. Higra, whose generous support helps keep the lights on and flickering ominously. Not a supporter already? Head over to patreon.com/talestoterrify, where you'll find all kinds of perks, like ad-free episodes, bonus content, and one-of-a-kind collectibles and merch packs. Every dollar goes back into this show to make it as horrific as possible, and we appreciate it so much. Want another way to support the show that doesn't cost a cent? Head over to Podchaser, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star rating or review. You'll not only put an unnaturally wide smile on our faces, but help new listeners discover our terrifying tales, too. Why not share your love of the show out in the world with some Tales to Terrify merch? TalesToTerrify.com/merch will take you to our Tee Public store, where we've got a great collection of creepy custom and curated designs, so you can show those around you just how twisted you truly are. Tales to Terrify is produced by Seth Williams, Meredith Morgenstern, Andrew Gibson, Crystal Hammond, Spencer Disparti, and myself, Drew Sebastini, with original theme by Nebulous Entertainment. Tales to Terrify is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives License. Join us again next week as we relish in supernatural vengeance with more Tales to Terrify.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.